Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased true crime channel. First on the docket, more motions in the Lori Vallow matter. I'll explain. Second, we will discuss Boulder, Colorado. Third, for a third time, Ghislaine Maxwell denied bail. Fourth, we have a jury in the Derek Chauvin matter. Fifth, an update on the dominatrix and the priest. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. If you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button as well as the little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. A busy docket yet again. And yet again, that's right, it's coming from the Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell matter. As you may recall, there was a hearing yesterday that only dealt with the issues regarding the pro hoc vice admission of the new special prosecutor that prosecutor Wood wants to hire or may have already hired and would like to have her admitted to prosecute the case. They only went forward yesterday as it related to Chad Daybell's matter. And miraculously, a motion was filed, an objection was filed by Mr. Means on behalf of Lori Vallow late yesterday. And boy, is this going to make you chuckle. All right. Let's get to it. Let's explain what's going on. First, do you recall a couple of weeks ago, the defense on behalf of Lori Vallow filed a motion for specific discovery? Basically, it's a request saying, we demand the state turn this information over. Specifically, this was the motion, specific request for discovery pursuant to Idaho Rules of Criminal Procedure, Rule 16. It was filed March 8th. And in that request, the defense wants a list of all the deputies, the authorities and or jailers for the Madison Sheriff's Department, Madison County Detention Center, Rexburg Police, Madison County Prosecutor's Office, or any other agencies identified as authorities of jailers, including but not limited to the full name, specific title of employment of said authorities. Include their full name, date and time of conversation, specific statements of anybody regarding any conversations involved this case. And then finally, the request include, please produce all records tangible, said communications, comments, tangible or intangible, included but not limited to reports, recordings, text messages, emails, phone records, voicemails, pictures, videos, and or the alike. Whew. Sounds so lawyerly like, doesn't it? That's right. You always got to include everything in there so that somebody said, well, you didn't mention that. So you got to include it all. Well, the prosecutor responded. Their response, and I hate to, and I'm a defense guy, right? I'm a defense attorney. You want the defense to be like, yeah, kind of sticking it to the man. But I just haven't seen any of that thus far. The prosecutor's response is simple and straightforward. Prosecutor responds in their motion that was filed on March 22nd at 4:59 p.m. The state objects to requests 1, 2, and 3 of the defendant's special request on the following grounds. 1, outside the scope of Rule 16, right? Rule 16 says you have to turn over everything related to the case in your possession. Prosecutor says nothing in Rule 16 would require the disclosure of the requested information. 2nd, the request would require the state to perform the defense investigation and collect the evidence the defense should collect for itself. And I hate to say it, but he's right. I'm a defense guy, right? I mean, I've filed these motions occasionally to say, hey, I want this, this, and this. And sometimes they go get it, and sometimes they don't. But really, these are all things that the defense could go and get on their own. It's called the power of the subpoena. You simply go, you're an attorney, you issue the subpoena, you write up what you want, you serve it on them, you serve it on the prosecutor. If the person that is objecting to producing the documents or the information objects, they file a motion to quash and you set a hearing. If they're going to produce it, but you still set a court date for a return date on the subpoena, and there you go. It's not the prosecutor's job to go get this information so that the defense can litigate these collateral issues as to whether Ms. Vallow is being treated unfairly because she cannot see her attorney, according to her defense attorney, at times that he wants to see her. So I think when this is all heard on April 4th, I believe is the next hearing date, guess what? My prediction is that the defense request for all that information to be turned over is denied. So now, yesterday there was the motion regarding the admission of Rachel Smith. She is the Missouri attorney who used to be a former prosecutor and now basically has her own private practice with a very limited civil case, but apparently is retained as a special prosecutor in various jurisdictions. Mr. Wood wants to bring her on, and basically the court allowed that to go through. There was an objection made yesterday by Mr. Pryor, the attorney for Chad Daybell. Additionally, the court made some inquiry as to whether there was in fact jurisdiction. But since Mr. Wood stated that, hey, we're not asking for the county, Fremont County, to pay for Madison County's fees related to hiring Ms. Smith, it's not really an issue. And judge, they would have the authority to practice if they are sworn as a special deputy district attorney. It doesn't matter who's paying for that particular situation. As I stated yesterday, and I wasn't knocking Mr. Wood, but it's kind of humbling. I mean, sometimes you have to admit, hey, we just don't have the resources or the experience to handle a case with this amount of large discovery. And if you don't do it on a routine basis, you simply don't have the infrastructure to handle those type of cases, all right? If a huge racketeering case comes in, we're set up for it. We have the attorneys. We have all those types of necessary equipment that you're going to need to go through the discovery, to index it, to sort it, to search it. And if you don't have one of those cases, you need more than just a little old laptop to get through that. It's just, it can't be done. So at least Mr. Wood recognized, hey, we need some help here. I've never knocked Mr. Wood. I think he's a fine attorney. I have no reason to doubt it. It's a little humbling to say I need help. However, it's also a good sign that you're a humble person and you think, hey, let's bring somebody in that's done cases like this and let's go forward. So Mr. Means has filed an objection. First, he says, quote, barred from hearing motion. The motion is barred, in parens suspended, from hearing as a result of previous court orders. Doesn't make any sense to me. I'm not sure which previous court order. Then saying the court lacks jurisdiction, saying the plaintiff, it's not the plaintiff, it's the people, the prosecutors, attempting to put the cart before the horse. No charges other than those presently before the court are subject to this court's jurisdiction and review when considering this motion. Court consideration of published, quote, threatened, end quote, future charges are not before this court and therefore not grounds for granting this motion. In summary, the prosecution has clearly placed the cart before the horse and as such is asking for speculation by this court to justify this motion. This matter is concealment / conspiracy to conceal case and nothing more. Consideration of non-existent charges would be improper and an abuse of discretion. The current charges are not presented as expertise of Ms. Smith. Now, I can honestly tell you, I've never had anyone object to an admission for pro hoc vice. When I've been retained or even as CJA counsel in another jurisdiction, nobody objected to someone's admission. And I'm not really sure, but basically saying this case isn't that complex, why would Mr. Wood need help? It's not really for the defense. The prosecution has unlimited resources, and if they want to bring on a team of attorneys, they can do that. So I'm not really sure I understand that particular argument by Mr. Means. And then Mr. Means goes on and said he waived righted. Never heard that term. Prosecutor Rob Wood is the public prosecutor of Madison County, state of Idaho. He is elected and obligated to perform prosecution of, quote, crimes, end quote, as his duty. Said prosecutor filed with the court his motion to be appointed a special prosecutor for this case outside of Madison County, state of Idaho. At the time he filed said motion, he was aware of his staff and office capabilities, again prior to appointment as special prosecutor. He has waived any motion for additional retention of counsel in this matter by asserting his capabilities to handle said matter. Put aside the tremendous financial cost to the county and state, Mr. Wood represented to the court that he and Madison County could prosecute this case without bringing in a pitch hitter to do his elected job. Basically goes on and says, it just can't believe that he can't prosecute this office. And as a member of the citizen, he is outraged at the expense of bringing in somebody else. I'm a little surprised that there's no other prosecutor in the state of Idaho that would be qualified to do this particular position. But hey, that's the prerogative of Mr. Wood. If he wanted to hire a team of attorneys, he could do so. Now, let me tell you a little story. When I was a young lad and I was a prosecutor in the military, there was this case and all the witnesses had scattered literally around the world because we were at the Parris Island Recruit Depot where the court-martial was taking place, and literally the witnesses had scattered all over the world. And I went to the convening authority, who was a colonel at the time, and said, you know, sir, this is going to take a lot of money to bring all these people back. It's coming out of your budget. Is this really worth going forward on, et cetera, et cetera? Making all the arguments that you make when you're advising the convening authority. And the colonel looked at me and said, Captain, there's always money for justice. And that was it. And that's what we had to do. We flew in everybody from around the country to prosecute the defendant in that particular case, from around the world, I should say. We flew everybody in from around the world to prosecute that case because justice is expensive. And that resonated with me because every time you have a case and you think, we're going to break the bank on the prosecution, they'll never be able to prosecute this case. Witnesses are over. It's too expensive. They always find the money. Just like in this particular case, Mr. Wood found the money to bring in somebody to assist with this case. Bottom line, it's his office, it's his money, he can do it. Frankly, these objections to a prosecutor coming in pro hoc vice is frankly ridiculous. If it was just a prosecutor that was hired from already working in the state of Idaho, they couldn't be upset in any way whatsoever. I can't believe they tried to make these arguments with a straight face. But hey, just calling it the way I see it. Next on the docket, let's talk about Boulder, Colorado. This is not that far from our offices here. It's a good 15-20 minute drive, depending on traffic, to downtown Boulder. Boulder is a different place in and of itself. And everyone in Boulder never believes anything bad can ever happen there. The joke is that it is literally 20 square miles surrounded by reality. It doesn't have to deal with a whole lot of economic hardship because it's a college town. People always send their kids to go to college. There's always money that's going to be there in the state, and it's very expensive to live there. Well, yesterday, a gentleman by the name of Ahmad Al-Alui Alisa broke, shattered everyone's little bubble in Boulder. Now, this is absolute senseless violence. And every time a mass shooting situation takes place, what does it usually come down to? Some fanatic, one way or the other, on either side of the political spectrum, or mental health issues. What do we have here? According to the brother of the suspect, Ali Alwa Alisi, the suspect's 34-year-old older brother, says that the defendant in this particular case has mental health issues. He says he's very antisocial and paranoid. He added in an interview with the Daily Beast that in high school, he would be describing people chasing after him or someone was behind him. When he would go to lunch with his family, he would be adamant that people were in the parking lot looking for him. This is not a whodunit type of case. I'm sure King Supers has amazing video that will show everything that happened step by step. Our hearts go out to all the victims in this particular case because, as I said, it is a tragedy. But once again, we have someone with mental health issues. Certainly not a defense, but it just goes to show you how many people, and I've said this many, many times before on this show, this is not the first time, mental health is the big elephant in the room. The elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about because it makes people feel uncomfortable. Well, I think it's about time that we start talking about mental health issues. And it's okay if people feel uncomfortable because maybe it will help them either get some help themselves, or it will maybe push family members to tell somebody that their family member or close friend needs to get help because of mental health issues. Many, many of my clients over the years have had mental health issues, and whether they're involved in drugs or alcohol and they're self-medicating or been schizophrenic, it's something that can be addressed in most situations if we talk about it, but most people don't. Now, obviously, all the victims in this particular case, it's a tragedy. Nobody expected when they went to go pick up a few groceries at the King Supers that that was going to be the last time that they would ever see their family members. It's a tragedy, but we need to look at what is making these things happen, not just ignoring it again and again and again. All right, next on the docket, for a third time, Ghislaine Maxwell denied. That's right. A Manhattan federal judge has denied Ghislaine Maxwell's request for bail before her trial in connection to the Jeffrey Epstein sex trafficking ring. In a ruling on Monday, U.S. District Court Judge Allison Nathan wrote, "If the court could conclude that any set of conditions could reasonably assure the defendant's future appearance, it would order her release. Yet while her proposed bail package is substantial, it cannot provide such reasonable assurances." And I understand Ms. Maxwell wants to go home. Who wouldn't want to go home? Particularly when you're facing the fact that you may never go home. But now is the time for Ms. Maxwell to come to the realization. I'm sure her attorneys have tried to convince her that she needs to face this new reality, that she may not be going home ever, and get used to it and focus on the task at hand, which is preparing for a defense. When the defense is wasting time on motions that everybody knows is going to be denied, you're wasting your client's money and you are wasting time your attorneys could be preparing for trial. All right, let's take a quick recess. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, we have a jury. The 15th and final juror was chosen this afternoon in the murder trial of ex-Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. That's right, the case involving the death of George Floyd. The proceedings will now be recessed until the attorney's opening statement, which is scheduled for next Monday. The jurors are broken down as follows: a multi-race woman in her 20s, a multi-race woman in her 40s, two black men in their 30s, a black man in his 40s, a black woman in her 60s, four white women in their 50s, a white woman in her 40s, a white man in his 30s, and two white men in their 20s, and a white woman in her 20s. Now, obviously, the jury will only be made up of 12 jurors. The alternates will be dismissed before deliberations were to commence. And I'm telling you, this is going to be worth watching. This will be televised here. We will play it on Crime Talk and bring it to you live. And if my schedule permits, if I'm not in trial, I will maybe be sitting here letting you in on some insight as we go through this case. Obviously, the prosecution is going to say that former officer Derek Chauvin killed George Floyd by putting his knee on the back of George Floyd, ultimately causing him to suffocate. The defense theory of the case is that Officer Chauvin followed police training and protocols, did everything correctly, and that Mr. Floyd would be alive today had he not swallowed fentanyl that he had on his person and was attempting to hide it when the police made contact with him for passing an alleged phony $20 bill at the grocery store that he and a couple of acquaintances were with prior to the police contact. This will be an interesting verdict. This will be an interesting case to watch. What will also be interesting is what happens after the verdict. I love the fact that Judge Cahill is broadcasting this for the world to see. I think it was interesting that the prosecution was the team in this particular case that didn't want the case prosecuted, and it was the defense that wanted it prosecuted. We'll see how the evidence comes out. I'll be watching as much as I possibly can, if not all of it, and we'll tell you how it goes. I really don't know how it'll go, and I don't really have a side that I'm rooting for. Let's just see how the facts come out. The expert witnesses are going to be huge in this particular case. I don't expect Derek Chauvin to testify, but that's a game time decision. Next on the docket, do you remember the case that we brought you back in September where an onlooker was peering into a Catholic church in Louisiana, and what they saw was the priest, now no longer a priest, allegedly having sex with two women that were dressed in high heel boots and corsets. A tripod with a camera had been set up recording the entire incident. The eyewitness decided to take their own video of the incident and sent it to police authorities. The video allegedly showed the priest as he pulled up his priest uniform and bent over the altar. Lights were set up around the trio as if they were filming some type of event. Police initially arrested the priest of the St. Peter's and Paul, Reverend Travis Clark, on obscenity charges. Clark had been the priest at the church since 2019. Now, according to the arrest warrant, Mindy Dixon, 41, an adult film actor who worked as a dominatrix, was involved in the video, as well as Melissa Cheng. Both were initially charged with obscene acts. Police said Dixon posted on Facebook in September of 2020 that she was on her way to meet a fellow dominatrix and defile a house of God. Now, the district attorney announced Friday that the trio would face lesser charges of vandalism. Dixon and Cheng's lawyer, Bradley Phillips, told the press that the prosecution overstepped their bounds when they brought charges against the women. Instead, after waiting nearly 6 months, the state has decided to move forward with a lesser charge of institutionalized vandalism. It's clear that the state went out of its way to contort the facts of this case in order to fit their own narrative. The attorney goes on and said, once again, they've overstepped their bounds, and nothing is more thinly veiled attempt to regulate the morality of private individuals. Just because you don't like something doesn't make it criminal. His clients look forward to their day in court, and they will continue to fight these baseless allegations. Now, you have to admit that the state law in Louisiana doesn't make it illegal to have sex inside of a building with no one onlooking. Here, it was the passerby, maybe engaging in a little voyeurism themselves, that possibly could be charged. Obviously, these people didn't invite them in, but yet they looked in the window. Interesting, interesting case. I can't wait for this one to go to trial. Let's face it. What is a greater headline than the dominatrix and a priest? What could you say? So, a priest and two dominatrix walk into the church. I mean, You can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. I love it. All right. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. An Arkansas man was suspected of stabbing his wife's new boyfriend. And in fact, he ultimately did in fact stab the new boyfriend, and the boyfriend died. When the police arrived, they were looking for the husband, 35-year-old Elliot Stewart. He was nowhere to be found. The police were canvassing the neighborhood, telling everybody to stay inside. There is a dangerous man running about the neighborhood. Well, then the police received a call. Can you please come here to my house, please? No, ma'am. We're very busy. We're looking for an armed man running around the neighborhood. Be careful. Lock your doors. The neighbor said, okay, we've locked our doors, but there's a man stuck in my chimney. It's a little uncertain, but the obvious is that Mr. Elliot Stewart climbed up on the house of the in the neighborhood and somehow thought it would be a good idea to hide in the chimney. Only problem was, he didn't figure out how he could get out of the chimney. Fire crews had to disassemble the bottom of the fireplace and remove several bricks to be able to get him out. You can see by the photograph here that he is being escorted out of the residence, whereupon he was taken to jail and charged with first-degree murder. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. We have our live program this evening, 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Please join us. We have a lot to talk about. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.